from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning in our opening hour, we find out all about Majority Whip Kevin McCarthy, who is expected to be named today as the next House Majority Leader. He'll be replacing Eric Cantor, who lost his seat last Tuesday in the Virginia primary. Congressman McCarthy from the Central Valley in California represents the state's 23rd congressional district. Then at 9:30, we discuss the decision by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office to cancel trademark registrations for the National Football League's Washington Redskins because that team name has been judged to be disparaging to Native Americans. An hour of Forum up ahead after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Congressman Kevin McCarthy, a California Republican and Majority Whip of the U.S. House of Representatives, is the frontrunner to succeed Eric Cantor as the Majority Leader in an election set for today. McCarthy's home district in the Central Valley has a 35% Latino population and is heavily agricultural. What will his election mean for California, and how will House Majority Leadership under him likely shape up? We want to discuss a number of issues like immigration reform and what Kevin McCarthy's role is apt to be with a number of other issues as well. Joining us, Bill Whalen, research fellow with the Hoover Institution, a contributor to Hoover's Advancing a Free Society blog, and a regular columnist now for the Sacramento Bee. Welcome, Bill Whalen.
Hi, Michael.
Good to have you. Also good to have Susan Davis with us from Washington. She's in the press office of the Senate Gallery in the state, in the nation's capital. And Susan Davis is a chief congressional reporter for USA Today. And we welcome you, Susan Davis, back to Forum. Good morning.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. And let me begin by saying that this is a fascinating story, Kevin McCarthy's. He was a lottery winner at the age of 19 and went on to invest $5,000 in a deli and went on from there to serve in the California State Assembly and then became the whip, one of the young guns, so-called. Let's talk about what he brings to this job. I mean, Susan Davis, from your perspective and from just about everyone else's, it seems like we're going to have a pretty seamless transition. He worked closely with Cantor, and they were two of the young guns.
I think that's right. I don't think that it's going to mean much in terms of a substantive shift in the legislative agenda. Eric Cantor, who was defeated last week in his primary, and Kevin McCarthy are good friends, and they've been political allies since they've served together, and Cantor publicly endorsed McCarthy for the job. I think part of the reason why he's going to have what is expected to be a fairly seamless election today, he's facing only one opponent, a congressman from Idaho named Raul Labrador, is that they haven't really had much time to mount a challenge. We found out that Eric Cantor lost last Tuesday. Lawmakers have only had about a week to run these leadership campaigns, and he worked very quickly to lock it up. Part of what helped him in that is that prior to his role in the leadership, he was also very involved at the National Republican Congressional Committee, which is the House Republicans campaign operation. And he played a very significant role in recruiting and helping the candidates that won in 2010 that helped sweep Republicans into power. So Kevin has a lot of well-established relationships among the rank and file, and I think that a lot of that political work that he did in 2010 also is going to help him today sort of lock up the votes. It's important to remember that this is a short-term election. We're going to open up the leadership slate again after November, and while he's probably well-positioned to stay on as majority leader, I don't think it's a certainty at this point.
The relationships he has with not only Republicans, in fact, he comes from a family of Democrats. He's the only Republican in his personal family. But his relationship with congressional representatives in general appears to be quite good. He's given a lot of high marks for political astuteness and affability. And the fact of the matter is we've got a very different kind of character than we had in Eric Cantor here. I mean, just in terms of stylistics.
Absolutely. I mean, Kevin is a very social person, which seems sort of funny when you talk about politicians. I think Cantor was very likable, and he had good relationships. But I think he was more more boardroom focused. I think he ran the conference with much more of a business like efficiency. I think Kevin has worked very hard to build social relationships. You know, he's done things like organize movie nights for the Republican conference. He goes on regular bike rides. He's very big on having members bring their families and wives. lives to events. In his office on the first floor of the Capitol, it's constantly stacked with food and snacks, and encourages members to stop in and talk. He's very casual. I mean, he's a big texter. I also think he brings sort of a generational difference to leadership. This is someone who has, I don't know if you have followed him on Instagram, but he's very interested in social media. And in some ways, people will say that this may benefit him as leader, where the majority leader's role is really developing an agenda, building consensus, and working a lot with the committee chairman to figure out what bills they're going to be voting on. As majority whip, you could almost say he was not as well suited for that job, because the whip's job, more often than not, is to get people to fall in line. And you have to be, that's why they call it the whip, you have to crack the whip on people. And I think sometimes he had difficulty doing that because it's just not naturally who he is. He's a much more... I think he wants to be liked. I think he's much more social, and I don't think he was good at maybe being intimidating the way that lawmakers need to be. I think Tom DeLay is probably someone who best personified someone who could be a good whip and who could...
more like a hammer than a whip.
Exactly. So he was, obviously he's well-liked because they're going to promote him today, but if you talk to his allies and friends, they say, you know, maybe he, sometimes when they would fail on the floor, they didn't have the votes for bills, it was because he had to fight against his own personal nature to be, you know, the heavy guy, to be the heavy in leadership. And maybe as majority leader, being more of a consensus builder and a big thinker guy will be good for him. It is important to note, though, that he's probably the least experienced lawmaker to ever step into this role. Since he's gotten here, Kevin's always really focused more on the politics and the big picture and recruiting candidates and winning elections. And he has not really produced much of legislative product. He didn't really come up through the committee system. He's not particularly known for any areas of interest, although I will say that he is particularly very interested in agriculture issues and technology issues, in large part because of his home state of California.
Well, he certainly whipped together support for this job, and he had a number of failures, pretty much in terms of just assuring the legislation passed. Couldn't always deliver the votes for Boehner, but he certainly seems to have a good relationship with Boehner. And Bill Whalen, that may bode well, at least for not only ongoing work that has to be done in the House, but also his future as possibly even succeeding Boehner. I'm wondering, though, what your take is on the fact that well, first of all, let's talk about California. He certainly has built up good relationships in Silicon Valley, and from that perspective, he's done a lot of yeoman work in the way that Cantor did.
He has. He is a young man by House standards. He will be 50 years old in January. Nancy Pelosi, by contrast, was in her early 60s, I think, when she ascended to the corresponding position with Democrats. He travels out to Silicon Valley at least once a month. He is back in his district almost every weekend, and he spent a lot of time traveling to districts of other members and building relationships with them, as Susan mentioned, not just raising money for them and helping them get elected, but also taking care of them once they got in the House in terms of getting provisions into bills, getting measures put on the floor. So just a very, very smart politician in that respect. Now, it'll be interesting to see what the next step is, because there is one big wild card in all this that Susan alluded to, and that is John Boehner and what John Boehner's future is in the House. Some people think he may leave within the next term if the Republicans get the Senate back in this November, and maybe there's a Republican presidency coming along in 2016. Maybe Boehner is re-energized. He wants to stick around for two or three terms, but at the age of 49, McCarthy is in a position to inherit the speakership at a relatively young age.
Well, I'll talk with you more about McCarthy in California, but who do you think is likely to move into the whip position?
Well, that's a fascinating question. Now, if our viewers don't quite understand what's going on here, there are two votes today. One is for the majority leader position, and that's a straight up and down vote between two gentlemen, and whoever gets 117 of the 233 ballots wins. If McCarthy is the winner, then that creates a vacancy for the whip job. If he loses, there's no vacancy. So there are three people looking for it right now, a gentleman from Illinois, a gentleman from Indiana, and a gentleman from Louisiana. And what's fascinating about it is this. The preferred choice of McCarthy and others would be the gentleman from Illinois. If he prevails, then you have a really curious existence in the House of Representatives in this regard. The Speaker of the House will come from Ohio, which is a purple battleground state. The majority leader will come from California, which is the bluest of blue states. The new whip will come from Illinois, a decidedly blue state, maybe even more so than California in some respects. And the number four Republican in the House, who is Kathy McMorris Rogers, she comes from Washington State, another blue state. So despite this red state vision Republicans have, the sort of the blood of the party, the heart and the soul of the party, the leadership is not red state.
Well, despite the red and the blue, what we're at least able to garner at this point is that Kevin McCarthy's ascendancy, which is pretty much in the bag, is going to mean probably a boost for technology and energy, and also, well, for a number of other things that we can look to. But he's going to be in a kind of difficult position with respect to immigration. I mean, he said he thinks an immigration bill can go through, but at the same time, he's got a constituency that's about 30% Latino, and this presents some difficulties.
Well, it presents difficulties not just in terms of his district, but in terms of actually getting something done through the House. Immigration reform is the Gordian knot of American politics, and no one's quite figured out how to neatly untangle it. Do the Republicans try to craft a bill in the House which is just strictly Republican written, and they get it through in a majority vote? If they do, they then have to sit down with the Democratic Senate, if they do it this year, and come to some sort of compromise, and then goes to the president, and then they negotiate again. Or do they try to reverse engineer it this year and pass something that has both Republican and Democratic buy-in, and then again negotiate? Or do they wait until 2015, or do they wait until after the 26th election? And you could have, Michael, a separate show with an hour discussion of three or four very bright people, and each one could come to a conclusion that there are three different ways to go about this, and each one can make a pretty good case.
What do you think, though, is actually going to be happening vis-a-vis immigration reform under the leadership of Kevin McCarthy? I mean, it's a Gordian knot, but is it a Gordian knot? It's a Gordian knot that he said publicly he would like to find a solution for.
Okay, if I had to bet your money and not mine, because I wouldn't dare bet my money on this situation, I think I would look at it this way. It doesn't happen in 2014. All politics is local in the House, and except for a handful of Republicans who come from very heavily or majority Latino districts, it's not an issue in their home districts. They're not going to vote for it in this cycle. It would seem to me make more sense for them to wait until after the 2014 election, see if they have complete control of Congress, then they can negotiate between themselves and then with the president rather than have to go through this more complicated bank shot with Harry Reid. I think what McCarthy will look at, though, because he is a very smart, big-picture Republican who, as a young gun and as somebody who spends a lot of time recruiting candidates and wants to grow his party, will come to this conclusion. And the analogy I would use would be Lyndon Johnson in 1964 when he signed the Civil Rights Bill. Lyndon Johnson signed that bill, and he famously said, or maybe didn't say, but it's a great line anyway, he supposedly turned to an aide and said, "There goes the South." Now, I think what McCarthy and his colleagues might look at, those who want to grow the party, will realize that the Republicans can continue to do okay at the congressional level, the House and Senate level, without acting on this, but they have to do something by 2016. And so I suspect that he will push very hard with Boehner to do something in 2015 on the matter.
I should also mention, I think I misspoke, that the Latinos in his district number up to 35%,
right,
and that's a district that relies on the Central Valley on immigrant labor. He'll be scheduling House votes on immigration, so his role is pretty significant here. Talking with Bill Whalen, research fellow of the Hoover Institution and a contributor to Hoover's Advancing a Free Society blog and a regular columnist for the Sacramento Bee, and Susan Davis with us from Washington, chief congressional reporter for USA Today. Susan, likely to take a more Western perspective, perhaps, with Kevin McCarthy, and possibly more on water and the environment and even job creation for California. There's a lot of speculation on that, but what about the fact that he's in opposition to Keystone XL Pipeline and, is in favor of the Keystone XL Pipeline, but is in opposition to Jerry Brown, our governor's favorite project, which is the bullet train?
Well, I think this is what's going to be interesting, too, to watch, because what has become increasingly true about Congress in the modern era versus maybe even 15, 20 years ago is that leadership jobs used to be seen as a boon back home, that your constituents liked it. You were seen as delivering for California or for Ohio or wherever you were from. And now, particularly on the Republican side, being in leadership is almost a negative. I think that what happened to Eric Cantor last Tuesday shook a lot of members to their core. I mean, no majority leader has ever lost in a primary election, and now it happened, and they didn't even see it coming. So it will be very curious to see how Kevin McCarthy, who has a much more politically interesting district, as you alluded to, because of the Latino population, even though it's reliably conservative, that I think a lot of the national interest that was focusing on people like John Boehner and Eric Cantor, particularly among Tea Party, which is sort of shorthand, I guess, just for anti-establishment conservatives, how they focus on him and how he balances those needs back home. I don't think for his district in particular, the Keystone issue, for the state of California, it's probably out of step, but he's not running statewide. He's running in a Republican district, and his district, is the Bakersfield area, is still largely the home base of conservatism in California. So by the numbers, he should be pretty safe. I think being on the wrong side of Jerry Brown in his district is not going to be politically more of a problem. I think the issues that may hurt him more are perhaps the anti-immigration forces that are going to try and come in and keep pressure on him, and the fine line he's going to have to walk between keeping that base happy and also acknowledging that his district is 35% Latino, and the language and the way you talk about these issues can really inflame voters on both sides. I agree with what Bill said in terms of immigration. I don't think it's going to happen this year. And one thing that McCarthy has said from the beginning, long before Eric Cantor lost or this was a possibility, is that there is a tremendous amount of resistance in the House to doing a comprehensive bill, a huge sweeping one piece of legislation. They are much more interested in moving piecemeal bills to address sort of rifle shot issues along with immigration. You can have a debate over whether that'll be effective or not, but McCarthy as a leader is very circumspect about moving one sweeping piece of legislation similar to what the Senate has done.
Let me invite listener participation at this point. You may have expectations about the leadership of Kevin McCarthy. You may have hopes or concerns, and this is an opportunity for you to express whatever those may be. And what do you think about the likelihood of immigration reform and the rather difficult in some ways position that Kevin McCarthy is in a heavily Latino district where immigrant labor is certainly not only welcome but necessary if he is indeed going to push for immigration reform? Anyway, we'd like to hear from you, and our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls, and now would be the time to call. It's a half-hour segment, so if you have something you'd like to get in to the mix, please call now, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments right onto our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, and you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. More Western perspective with Kevin McCarthy. What would that mean, Bill Whalen?
Well, I think it's important to understand where he comes from in California. We're here in the Bay Area, where the driving issues are what? Trade, technology. He's from Bakersfield, where the driving issues are energy and what Susan alluded to, agriculture. So you will hear him talking about energy issues related to California. You're going to hear a lot more talk about water, about endangered species, about balancing farmers versus nature. But you'll also see him, I think, on the jobs front as well, because McCarthy is trying to get two or three Republicans elected for the first time around the state this year. And so he's trying to tap into their elections and get them to talk a jobs agenda. So he'll weigh in those ways. Now, I found it very interesting when this first happened, when Cantor lost and McCarthy's name came forward, one of the first Democrats to pop up and say wonderful things about him was Steny Hoyer, the number two man in the House. So perhaps you'll see a bridge between the two. One other thing I'd point out about McCarthy, by the way, while he does have a tricky district, it is 35% Hispanic, he has gone to great pains to avoid something that did in Eric Cantor, and that is not losing touch with his district. He goes back every weekend, and if you look on his social media, on his Facebook, he is constantly saying happy birthday to locals. He is going to football games. He is going to great lengths to show that even though he's an important person in Washington, he's still very much a person of Bakersfield.
Another interesting fact about Kevin McCarthy is that Kevin Spacey actually shadowed him when he was a whip for the role in House of Cards. And apparently he hangs out with people like Elon Musk and Arnold Schwarzenegger and Condi Rice. It's an interesting social set of well, he's been associated and identified with. Let me get some callers on here. And Jason, you're first up. Good morning.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show. I was just looking at like votesmart.org, which is shows voting records of all the different representatives in Congress. And when I was looking over immigration related issues, you know, McCarthy, whether it's like piecemeal issues, whether it's like renewing S-CHIP just for immigrants or just supporting like the DREAM Act, it seems like he's always voted against that stuff, in spite of the fact that he has a Latino district. And, you know, I guess my assumption is most of those Hispanics are probably Democrats. So I'm not sure. I would like to hear the panelists talk about, like, how, you know, McCarthy has any form of moderation on immigration. And
yeah.
I'll stick my finger on the air.
Good question. Bill Whalen?
I can't go into specific votes with you, but there was an interesting article written, I think it was by the American Spectator or National Review the other day, which compared McCarthy's record to Eric Cantor's record, and what they did was they went to various groups like the American Conservative Union and Club for Growth, those in Washington, and what they found was McCarthy actually scored lower on the conservative scale than Cantor did.
Some thoughts from you, Susan Davis?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, well, it's also, you know, we do talk about the Hispanic population in this district. I don't know what the breakdown is of them in terms of Republican and Democrat, and people are not, population is not necessarily the same as registered voters, so I'd have to see some of that data. I think on the whole, when you look at even voting records of John Boehner, who's the speaker, it probably would line up along those ways. I think that what they're, the push and pull they have is a lot of these bills they voted no on were Democratic bills, which is sometimes you just vote party line. I also think part of it is they are aware of the need to have the Republican Party be a bigger tent that Hispanics feel like they can be a more a part of. I just don't think that they know how to get there yet without absolutely inflaming their own base and how to move forward on an issue where you won't be effective if you're voted out.
Let me bring another caller on. Chris, you're on Forum. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Slightly different issue. McCarthy supports expansion of Yosemite National Park. It's being blocked by Buck McKinnon, who's just north of him and is also a Republican congressman. Do you think his advancement will give him more clout to convince McKinnon to change his mind?
Bill Whalen?
Well, I think that's Buck McKeon is referring to, and Buck McKeon is retiring at the end of Congress, so this might be a 2015 issue for the House.
Okay. And generally, I mean, what we're getting a picture of is someone who gets along very well with fellow Republicans, but does that include Susan Davis, those on the right? I mean, Labrador decided to run against him because he wanted those in the party to have a choice, presumably, to go to the Tea Party type if they wanted to.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I think what will be very telling today, they don't normally announce the tallies of these elections, although don't be surprised if allies to McCarthy make sure that Raul Labrador's vote tally gets leaked at some point. There is absolutely a divide within the Republican conference. And one of the challenges he's going to have as leader is trying to find a way to bridge the divide. I talked to a Republican lawmaker yesterday who said it's not really fair to say it's the conservatives in the conference because they're all conservatives. The Tea Party revolution has really shifted the entire party to the right. There are very few rank-and-file lawmakers you would consider moderate or centrist. The real way to look at the conference, I think, is helpful is the pragmatists and the ideologues. On a lot of measures, there's not a lot of disagreement among the members on what they want, what they believe. It's just whether you can take incremental victory, whether you need an all or nothing. The crowd that wants to shut down the government versus the crowd that's willing to take a budget deal that has incremental spending cuts, that kind of thing. I think the pragmatists outnumber the ideologues, which is why McCarthy's going to win today. But the ideologues cannot be ignored, and they are a significant factor that has prevented the Republican Party from advancing a lot of legislative items on their own votes. So he's going to have to walk a fine line between advancing an agenda and not doing things like shutting down the government, but at the same time not inflaming these forces. Now, when you talk to people that are supporting Raul Obrador, the more activist conservatives in the conference, they think they'll have a chance to run again in November, that they could make another run for majority leader.
Susan, excuse me, let me get a final word on this from you, yeah. Bill Whalen.
Kevin McCarthy has a unique little hitch in his office. You walk in there and he has photos of himself with other members on the wall. He rotates those constantly to show that he talks to a lot of people and doesn't play favorites. In true McCarthy fashion, let's see how many of the 60 or so people who vote against him today end up on that wall at some point in the next few weeks.
Well, and also, this is a different type of McCarthy. I mean,
a new McCarthyism.
A new McCarthyism, yeah. Thank you both for joining us. Susan Davis, Chief Congressional Reporter, USA Today. Bill Whalen, Research Fellow at the Hoover Institution and contributor to Hoover's Advancing a Free Society blog and a regular columnist now for the Sacramento Bee. When we return, we're going to talk about the Washington Redskins and the trademark name. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.